worldwide.
Whether you've merely heard of Linux or consider yourself an expert, here's your chance to learn more about it at the Southern California Linux Expo. For 2009, Scale 7X has added two new tracks for developers and beginners. We'll have over 60 speakers who will cover the latest topics in open source software, and the expo floor will have more than 80 booths featuring commercial and non-profit organizations showing their products and software. The Friday special sessions have returned with Docs, the open source conference for healthcare. Women in Open Source will reprise their conference, as will the Open Source Software and Education Conference. The Southern California Linux Expo is February 20th, 21st, and 22nd, 2009, at the Westin LAX Hotel in Los Angeles. For more information or to register for the expo, visit socallinuxexpo.org. Use promo code CAST, C-A-S-T, for 40% off of your registration, and we'll see you at Scale 7X.
Give me a T!
T!
L!
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 T!
T!
S!
S!
What's that spell?
Let's
get it going. The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Another exciting episode of the Linux Link Tech Show. This is episode 285. Today is Wednesday, February 11th. Welcome, everybody.
Myth TV Month Part 2.
Part 2. And we got a great guest. We got Cecil Watson from the Not Myth Project. Cecil, welcome back to the show. It's been a couple
Thanks,
years.
Guys. Yeah, it has.
So how you been?
Oh, not too bad.
What's new and exciting in the world of Not Myth?
So what's new and exciting is big changes are in store at Scale in a couple of weeks. I'll be introducing Linhess, which is Not Myth R6. I'll be changing the name of the project from Not Myth to Linhess, which is the Linux Home Entertainment System.
That's a pretty big jump.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, I think been a while coming, and glad that we're almost there.
So what's going to separate, like, Linhess from other Not Myth distribute or not Myth other Myth centric distributions?
Good question. Well, I think what separates Not Myth, you know, well, I'll just give a overview of Not Myth for those that aren't aware of it, and you know, get everyone up to speed. Essentially, I started the project going on 6 years now. I first tried Myth TV on Linux Mandrake, and that was a bit of a bear to install because of Myth TV itself, but because of the dependencies associated with, you know, getting its dependencies and their dependencies. You know, I just wanted to watch TV, and I thought it should be easier. So there was a few things that, you know, aligned my wanting to play with Debian, learning about Nopix, which is a live Linux on CD, being able to install Nopix and being able to remaster it. So after a few months of playing with Nopix, I had it to remaster to where I had Myth TV on there, and it was, you know, quick and simple, real easy to install, and I went from there. Some of the things we did with Nopix was For instance, the Hotbot PVR line of cards. When those were first being available for use with IVTV, you know, it was kind of a tricky proposition because you needed the firmware, and you know, in order to have the firmware, you of course needed to extract it from the Windows CD, which the users had to do manually. Well, I wanted to find an easy way to do that, so I actually wrote to Hotbot and said, hey, you know, this is a project and I'd like to include, you know, your firmware. And they were like, well, you know, you can't exactly do that because we don't own the firmware. But they allowed me to include the Windows drivers. And so what we did was we had the Windows drivers on the CD, and we detected if you had EVR 250, 350 at the time, it would automatically extract the firmware for you. So, you know, it got it up and running. Didn't need to do anything. You know, and it's essentially things like that that, you know, we've done with NotFit to make it easier to install. So, you know, the entire idea is just get it up and running as quickly as possible and as much hardware as possible. So our focus is more of, you know, treating it as an appliance. I can't necessarily, you know, say that's the focus of the other MIST-based distributions. I know, like, Linux MCE, you know, they have kind of a limited hardware set, so, you know, you're kind of limited there. Fedora, I've not played with. Played with MIST-Ubuntu some time ago. You know, the key idea, I think, is make it an appliance, make it easy, and, you know, just get the users going.
I guess the mindset that a lot of people have to get into is what, like you said, is to treat it like an appliance. You know, we install MIST TV on your machine. It's no longer your workstation, you know. It's basically, once you get it up there and running, you really shouldn't have to change the components to it unless there's something that you need that's currently not supported in your current version that you're running. You know, for instance, I've been running the same version for over a year now, and, you know, it's stable. I keep whatever's on there, and it keeps running.
Exactly. And then another thing I think that separates NotMIST from the other distributions is, you know, upgrading. Currently, when you do an upgrade, it's really kind of like a new install. You do a backup, get the new ISO, burn this to a CD, and you do an auto upgrade. And even though NotMIST is Debian-based and LinHeS is based on Arch Linux, the upgrade path is the same. You do a backup of NotMIST, get RSync when it's available, and you select upgrade from off the menu, and voila, you're up and running.
So what was the big...
No need to worry about it's a different distribution, so forth and so on. We've already, you know, taken care of all that work for you.
So what was the big reason for the switch from Debian-based to Arch Linux-based?
You know, I can't really say there was necessarily a big reason, but after, you know, the switch was made, you know, there are things that make it easier to have the system on Arch than Debian. You know, the big one that really actually got me wanting to use Debian in the first place was its package management system. Well, with Arch, it is far easier to create a package than it is with Debian. It's essentially a bash script, and, you know, it creates a package for you. I mean, it's a beautiful thing.
Yes, Arch, creating packages Arch are very simple, and it's not that involved. You can do it in a few minutes. And also, one of the other things about Arch that I always liked about it was that everything seems to be very up-to-date. You know, a lot of times with distributions, you know, it's a snapshot in time, and stuff tends to get, you know, stale after a while. And, you know, depending on whether or not that distribution backports new packages, you know, you could be left with something that's, you know, old, you know. And if you're talking about, like, you know, encoders and video and all that stuff, I think you tend to want to go with the newer versions.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, again, yeah, it's great to have the newer stuff, but, you know, some stuff you don't want to hop on right away.
One of the things about Ubuntu that kind of drove me nuts a little bit is, you know, for the longest time, their version of FFmpeg had a lot of things disabled by default, and you would have to always go in there and compile your own. And that's not an issue with Arch, as far as I know.
Oh, no. Well, you can compile your own, you know, and again, having the package build, you know, makes it that much easier. So if it isn't to your liking, just modify the package build, compile it, new version comes out, you know, you essentially change the version number, you know, bump it up and recompile, and voila.
Yeah, Arch is a really, you know, sweet, simple, you know, it's complex. Don't get me wrong, it's a little more hands-on, but there's a simplicity to it and an elegance that is just charming about it, I think, that allows you to do a lot of, you know, make packages and different things like that very easily once you get it down.
Yeah, you know, I'd have to agree it is hands-on, but the beauty of it is you know, the philosophy is, you know, keep it simple, which is essentially what I'm all about, and not missing Linhas, you know. All I want to do is watch TV. Let's keep it simple. We do the hard work, and, you know, hopefully the folks out there are enjoying it. And we've actually had folks that have been with us since the beginning that are enjoying it, so.
Well, one of the three things about Arch that always got me was the sheer speed of it. You know, it's completely up to you on what you install and how you configure it. So you can have a pretty lean, fast machine set up. And I don't think you can get with a lot of other distributions.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, with the new version, that, you know, with the Arch Space, are you still sticking with the Fluxbox as the window manager?
Yes. No, Flux is excellent. It's lean. You know, when it starts up, it kicks you right into the front end, so it's not like users are going to have to interact with it much. So Fluxbox is perfect for that.
So let me ask you a little bit more about the upgrade scripts that you wrote. What are they written in, and what are some of the challenges that you got to deal with to make a new install clean and successful, and how do you test that?
Well, you know, I think it being clean and successful goes back to when we first introduced the upgrade with NotMiss, and, you know, we decided on how we were going to partition the hard drive. So if you do an auto install on NotMiss, three partitions are created, a root, a swap, and then the bulk of the drive goes to the MIS partition, which is divided up into directories, TV, MIS TV, your recordings are stored there. There's video for your videos, gallery for gallery, music for music, etc. So you do a backup, and the most important thing is the database, obviously, because without the database, you know, you essentially have to start from scratch in terms of your metadata and so forth. So you do a backup, it backs everything up to MIS backup, the backup directory under MIS, and when you do a auto upgrade, that partition doesn't get touched at all. So the backup, actually, at the moment, everything is written in Bash. So for Linhas, the upgrades and the install stuff is written in Bash. What's really nice about Linhas is the new GUI, MIS Vantage, which is written by James Meyer. It takes advantage of the MIS libraries, so essentially, from the CD booting up to when it gets you into X, you know, to the daily use of the system, you know, it all flows as one. Again, you know, hitting home that, you know, this is an appliance. So all the configuration options that you do, it looks, you know, just like MIS.
Well, to me, you know, going back, I've been running the TV for a long time, and you know, going back, it used to take us so much time, and distributions like Not Myth and Myth Buntu and Myth Dora, they've really cut down that time to, you know, from days of tweaking and configuring to, you know, at most a few hours. And one of the things that always got me doing the setups, you know, and a lot of other people seem to trip up, was setting up remotes, configuring X properly with all the resolutions for the TV. I guess, you know, what are the challenges of doing these complicated configurations? Is it trial and error and just, you know, going through it and doing different configurations?
Well, a lot of it can be trial and error, but, you know, I think the biggest thing is hardware. Obviously, you know, we're limited to the hardware that we have. That is myself, the other developers, and the testers. So, you know, the big thing is community feedback. And one of the things we've seen with Not Myth over the years is, you know, a user is going to have, you know, X hardware that may not work with the distribution. But if they provide details in the forum and, you know, they work with us, the next release, you know, generally that we get the hardware working right out the box. So I'd say that's the big thing is, you know, we can only do so much without the various hardware that's out there for us to test on and ensure it works.
One of the best resources for Myth TV-related information for me has always been the Not Myth forums. You can go in there, you can see what other people are using, what hardware they're using, you know, what issues they've come up against. It's extremely useful, even if you're not running Not Myth.
Yeah, you know, the information there is definitely, you know, geared towards Myth, and there is nothing so different and Not Myth in terms of Linux that, you know, a user couldn't apply that to another distribution. You know, LIRC, for instance, you know, it's the same configuration files and everything, you know, that would be used in, say, Fedora or, you know, Slackware. You know, some of the placement might be a little bit different, but it should all work.
So I guess obviously the main supported capture cards were the Hoppog line. There are others that people use, but those have, you know, been for the real core capture device that everybody's used, you know, at least for standard definition capture for the longest time now. Looking forward to high def, you know, what are your thoughts on high def capture? Are you doing high def capture, and what are you using?
Yes, I've been doing high def capture for some time now in my own system, which I've actually called Linhis for a number of years. I have a TCHD 2000, a 3000, and a 5500, and I also have an Air 2PC card in my slave backend as well. Recently, I've been playing with the HAPA HVR 850, which is a USB device, and also PCTV HD PCI from Pinnacle.
And how are you liking those devices, the newer ones?
They're pretty good. They're pretty good. The PCTV HD from Pinnacle actually got on Woot a couple months back. Really good. Really surprised with the quality.
Well, what does that encode to, MPEG-2?
Well, it's HD. It's already in MPEG-2, so it just essentially just jumps the stream to disk.
So what is it? It supports what? Over the air and CAM?
Yes.
Have you had a chance to check out the PVR 1212 at all?
No, not yet. I don't have digital cable at home. You know, I don't have a cable box. I don't have DirecTV or anything like that. So there's no need for, you know, me per se to have one at the moment.
Because once the port is stable in MIT-TV, I think that device is poised to become the de facto capture device.
Just for the simple fact
that it can do, you know, component out capture.
Yeah. You know, if I were to have digital cable, I'm actually waiting for Verizon to put BIOS in the neighborhood, you know, and I probably will be getting the HD PVR.
Right, because that's pretty much, that's like cable TV pretty much. It's just going over fiber outside.
Yeah.
They'll probably just give you a, you know, run-of-the-mill cable box, high-def cable box. So that's cool. Now, as far as like a baseline system, I know you going, when we spoke to you last time, you were working with somebody. You guys had like a model MIT-TV set up using certain components. Are you still doing that?
Yes, and, you know, going back to the first question about what, you know, separates, you know, NotMIS from other distributions, you know, there's hardware. From the very beginning on the forum, I've had the hardware section split up into three different areas, which is Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3. Essentially, you know, Tier 1 hardware, it just works. Tier 2, it works, but you might have to tweak a configuration file. Tier 3 is hardware to avoid. And, you know, since the very beginning, I've been trying to reach out to different folks and, you know, essentially get like a shopping list, if you will, of hardware, and, you know, just to point folks to it, hey, you know, you get this hardware and it'll just work. And that's actually what I call the NotMIS reference platform. And the folks at mythic.tv, kudos to them, as they actually contacted me. And the first KRP system was the Dragon. Right now Dragon 2.0 is out, and then there's also the Australian Dragon for folks down under.
So even if they don't purchase a system from these guys, they can go to their website and look at specs, and if they build, you know, with the same parts, for the most part, it should all work out of the box.
Exactly. And actually, with the introduction of R6, I've built a couple systems that I'm going to demo at scale, and I'm actually going to raffle them off. One of them I call Atomic Ant, which is based on the Atom, the Intel Atom. It's a 3330. With a NVIDIA video card that supports VDPA. So it should be a real nice system capable of playing HD. The other system is the Parcel, because it delivers, and I have the specs for both of those up on the forum, so, you know, folks can go get those parts and, you know that it'll just work with R6.
So I'm assuming that you've played around with VDPA, you're right? What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I haven't played around with it extensively because I've been real busy with work the last couple of weeks and getting R6 ready, but, you know, it's definitely something I'm excited about. I'm actually kind of surprised that NVIDIA came out with a solution for, you know, Unix before Intel did. I was, you know, as much work as Intel does with Xorg and, you know, drivers and video and such, it kind of surprised me, but, you know, I'm happy to see it.
Yeah, it's going to be a real godsend, especially for playing back those H.264 files, which are fairly CPU intensive.
Yeah, the Atomic Ant, the system with the Atom, you know, it's fairly small and, you know, look real good in the living room next to, say, an HD DVR, you know, playing back your HD content.
Yeah, I guess these small factor, you know, these small form factor devices are pretty much the future. That's where things are going. You know, the whole thing with extenders and small embedded devices. There still is definitely a need, though, to have, you know, a full-featured, you know, box that's running everything, you know, that stores all your recordings and everything.
Right.
So what kind of a system are you running at home? Is it, you know, what kind of processor, how much memory? Are you running a combined system, or are you doing a back end with multiple front ends?
Well, I have two systems, a master back end and a slave back end. Like I said, I've referred to those as Linhas for quite a number of years. The master back end is actually a Dragon system, and the slave back end. It's a system I've just built myself.
And what are you doing with the slave back end?
Well, the way I have it split up is my master primarily holds all my recordings, and my slave has a couple tuners in it, and I put my music and videos on there, and I share, you know, share them via NFS.
So basically you're just able to share everything that's on the other machine.
Yes.
Have you played around with any, like, thin client front end at all?
No, I have not.
So what's your target date? Do you have a set date where you want to release the next version, or is it moving and fluid?
Next Saturday at Scale, I shall be there displaying Linhess.
So is that the official release?
That it is.
Cool.
You know, we don't have everything in there that, you know, we want to have in there, or everything that users have asked for, but the bulk of it is, and it's, you know, solid. I've been running it at home. Actually, I've been running Linhess R6 on my master backend, and at the moment I'm still running R5.5 on my slave backend. So the two are working together beautifully.
Yeah, what's nice about MIT-TV is you can have, you know, different distributions underneath, and they should all work together regardless.
As long as you're running the same version of MIT, yes.
Right.
So what plugins are you going to include with it? Or is it going to be everything?
At the moment, I have all the official MIT plugins. Plus, there's the MIT Apple trailers. Miro isn't an official plugin, but we include that. MIT Stream, at the moment, I'm working on MIT Vodka, MIT Games. I'm also going to have SDL Main, XE, which is another multi-system emulator. So everything is ready to rock and roll.
That's cool. So what?
So,
are you adding?
Go ahead,
have you
go
ever
ahead.
Written any of your own plugins for Myth?
No, I've not. You know, the funny thing about it is I don't really consider myself a programmer. I've never had any official, you know, programming classes or anything. I just wanted a solution, and you know, I worked at it, and here we are.
That's pretty cool, though. I mean, that's great, actually. Why can't you do something like that, Pat?
If I had the free time, I would. Fortunately, a job and a family get in the way. Well, what are you going to do?
Get rid of them. Get rid of them all.
No, I would never.
I know. But what are you going to do?
So what are you doing in your job? Is it systems related? What are you doing?
I work for a biometrics company.
So what's the hardest part about doing not Myth?
Oh, the hardest part. That's a good question.
I mean, has it been have you found it to be really rewarding?
It is. I think it's its own reward. You know, there are definitely some frustrations at the moment. One of my frustrations is getting a flashy working with R6. You know, someone might ask for, you know, what you first think is a simple, easy feature request, but, you know, it turns into an issue of, you know, getting things to compile. You know, you start to compile something, it errors. You go to the, you know, website of the whatever the program is, and you try and research it, do a Google search on the error, and stuff like that can be very time-consuming. I think that would be the most difficult thing is, trying to make everything gel, if you will.
Yeah, I can understand that.
So the new version of Lin has, it's going to be version 1.0? Is that what you're calling it?
No.
You're calling it release 6.
Yes. Release 6. I've always liked using the term, you know, release. Going back to, I think it was Ash 8. So it'll be release 6. 6.0.1, actually.
So when 0.22 comes out of Myth TV, are you going to do a middle release, you know, an update release? Or are you just going to wait till next cycle, whatever?
No. You know, the goal is always to try and have an updated release of the distribution when there's an updated release of Myth TV due to various factors. You know, that might not always be the case, but, you know, that's always the goal. And actually with Linhas, it'll be easier to upgrade because you won't have to download and burn a new CD. You can do an upgrade automatically using Pac-Man at the command line, or you can just configure the system to update itself automatically. And if you have multiple systems, you could have one system, say your master backend, get the latest packages, then all your remote systems can just grab the packages from there instead of, you know, eating up more of your bandwidth and obviously more of our bandwidth on the server side.
So let me ask you, have you talked to the Myth TV, not the Myth TV, the Arch Linux people at all about making Linhas the official version supported in Arch? Or are they going to maintain their own packages in their own repos?
No, I've not spoken to them. You know, the Myth TV packages in Arch as they stand right now could use some love. And the issue with, you know, using the same packages that we do in Not Myth, there's, you know, some specific things that we include that, you know, wouldn't be relevant to Arch. So it's kind of hard to try and maintain both, but hopefully in the next couple of months or so, you know, I'd hope to definitely contribute back, you know, a functioning Myth package to Arch.
Because one of the things about Arch Linux is it's a rolling distro, and there's, you know, there's always updates happening every so often. I guess, you know, should we follow the old adage, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it?
Yeah.
So there's no reason to upgrade packages, you know, unless it's a quote-unquote official release.
Right.
Come on, Pat. Ask your questions.
Don't
leave our guest hanging.
Well, I just want to say, you know, Cecil, you've done a great job. You know, you and other Myth-specific distros. You know, the whole argument against Myth TV was it's such a pain in the ass to install. Blah blah blah. It takes forever. You guys have just made it so much easier and approachable by people who aren't as technical to be able to get it done. And you know, even if they, you know, there are issues. You know, you guys have forums and IRC, and it's just awesome that you guys have, you know, given all to the community. Really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. You know, starting the distribution was, you know, for me was all about giving something back to the community. You know, I've used Linux at Home exclusively for, going on 11 years now. You know, I mean, it was just, you know, I had an idea and ran with it.
So clearly you're the main guy. Is anybody else contributing?
Yeah, especially with R6 there, you know, there's more folks contributing. You know, like I said, the new installer, which is, you know, I think when folks start to see it, it's just going to blow them away. You know, it was written by James Meyer, the the service menu. Like I said, that all uses the Myth library, so it's not like a separate GUI or anything. It all just flows as one application.
So what can you configure out of that, out of the service menu? What are some of the things that you can do in there?
Everything. You could add packages. You could remove packages. You don't like Myth games, take out Myth games. You don't like the Apple trailer, take out the Apple trailer. You have wireless, configure your wireless from here. Change your X resolutions. Configure your remote if we don't automatically detect it. You know, we miss it for whatever reason. Configure it. Set up your password, NFS. You don't need to drop to an X terminal to share NFS. Samba, you don't need to, you know, drop to an X terminal to set up Samba. You know, we have the configuration scripts already. Just, you know, click a button and, you know, Samba is up and running. It's sharing your files.
How about setting up MythWeb? Is there anything that needs to be done for that, or is it just all set up and running?
It's up and running out the box. If you want to, you know, restrict it via a password, you can do that from the service menu.
How about Sleep and Wake? Have you guys gotten into that whole thing?
We have NVRAM in there. You know, that's one of the things we're definitely going to be improving in future releases. And like I said, you know, when future releases are ready, they'll be real easy to upgrade.
Because that's a really useful feature. If my MythBox is, say, like recording, you know, at 2:30 in the morning, it's done recording, it's done all its commercial flagging, it's not doing anything. You know, after like, you know, 45 minutes, it shuts down by itself.
Yeah.
And if, you know, whenever there's a recording that's going to come up, it'll turn itself back on.
Right. I do.
I think that's pretty useful.
Wait, what does it do? It shuts itself down?
Yep.
Yeah.
Completely turns off?
Yep. Yeah.
How do you turn it back on then?
It turns itself on.
It has wake.
If your BIOS supports it, it'll set the wake-up time in the BIOS, and at that time, it'll wake up.
That's sweet.
Record the show, flag commercials.
So how often is your Myth TV box off then?
Well, at the moment, since I'm in torture testing, Linhess, I have it on all the time at the moment.
Yeah, my Myth box is more on than off, not for nothing, because... You know, a lot of times, you know, when I'm not home, my wife has, you know, got music playing for the kids or they're watching something. You know, it's more on than off, believe it or not. You just leave yours on, right, Dan?
Yeah, it's on 24/7.
So if you know, if you want to save some power, you know, wake and sleep are good things. Yeah, what are the areas I think that are you know, might be ripe going forward with Myth is the whole, you know, thin client thing. I know the MVPMC project guys, what they've done, they've taken the Media MVP, which is a thin client, standard def thin client that Hophog has, and
right.
They've released a replacement firmware that'll basically put Myth TV on that small embedded device, and it's real nice. And I know they're looking to do the same thing with some of the new generation of extenders like the Popcorn Hour and some of the other ones. Those are nice because you can have, you know, a small form factor box that doesn't really draw that much power. You know, it's all configured. You don't have to do anything really that much once it's up and running. Yeah, I'm kind of leaning going that route, you know, having the one main Myth TV box that does all my recordings, you know, acting as a back end to you know, extenders and thin clients.
Yeah, we support, you know, diskless front ends with not Myth than we will with Linhess. You know, having a NFS root for something like that would definitely be possible.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to get into that a little more, some of the embedded stuff. I think it's got some possibilities.
So do you use Arch as your main desktop then? I mean, Arch for everything?
That I do.
That's good.
It was us that sold you, right, Cecil?
No. Actually, it was James Meyer that suggested Arch, and
The
time Dale and I looked at it, and we liked it. You know, some folks had suggested Ubuntu or, you know, whatever else, but I just liked Arch. Actually, some time ago, I had a hybrid of Ubuntu and Konotix that I contemplated on using, but it was always something that bugged me about Ubuntu.
I don't know. My issues lately with Ubuntu is, you know, for the most part, I like it. I think it's a great distribution in Linux. It just seems that, like, certain packages, you know, they'll have certain things turned off, and it kind of drives me crazy a little bit. I guess if you want it done properly, you got to do it yourself, right?
Not at all. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, Dan, are you still running Arch?
I haven't run Arch for a year. I went back to Slackware for a while. It's because it's on my workstation, which I don't use too often, so I wasn't keeping up with the updates. And every time I'd run an update, it would be like 4 or 5 weeks of updates, and I kept breaking my system because I wasn't keeping up on it, and I was too lazy. It wasn't a problem with Arch. Arch was awesome. It was just I was too lazy.
Yeah, for a while, going back a couple of years ago, they had issues where, you know, an update would come down the pipe, and it would break a whole bunch of things. That seemed to have, you know, calmed down a little bit the last couple of years. It's not as bad.
I run into those, upgrade the kernel, and you have to boot off the CD to fix it.
Yeah, when you screw it up. That's funny stuff.
Stable, though. Updates recently have just worked.
Yeah, so...
Do you still have to do that, though? I mean, have they fixed that? Like, you used to have to be really careful when you upgrade the kernel... That you well, of course, you'd have to either run, if you weren't running Grub, you'd have to run Lilo, and that you'd have to make sure that it rebuilt the initrd or initramfs image, and it kept switching back and forth between the different versions, so you always had to edit.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Have they finally settled that, or?
Yeah, they have.
They have?
I've done about 5 or 6 kernel updates. And I've not had to worry about that in that time. Yeah, it's pretty stable.
Well,
it's definitely
good.
Better than it used to be. I have Arch running on one box, and it's been pretty good lately. I haven't complained about it.
Arch was always a solid distribution. We haven't talked to the Arch guys in a while.
Yeah, we talked to the new project head when he took over for Judd. I don't know, how long ago was that? Maybe a year ago?
Yeah,
I believe so.
So, are you looking for any help, Cecil?
My help is always welcome. You know, I think the thing that, you know, I've learned since starting NotMiss is, you know, if there's something that you want to do, you know, just do it yourself. And that would be my advice to anyone who's looking to do something with open sources. You know, if there's something you want to do, just hop in there and do it. If folks want to help, they're certainly more than welcome to help. And, you know, if you are out there and you want to help, just don't say you want to help. Actually contribute. Because that's the thing that, you know, I've kind of grown wary of is, people will say, oh, yeah, I want to help or whatever, and, you know, it's like you're waiting for them, and they never help.
Well, even if someone's not a programmer, they can't contribute in other ways. You know, documentation is a great area where people can help out, you know, pretty
low barrier of entry. Yeah, definitely. Documentation, testing, help tracking down bugs, you know, help on answering user questions on the forum, just being a member of the community. Yeah, so there's definitely more than one way to help.
Now, do you have a bug tracking system that you use, or is it just, you know, emails from you back and forth?
Actually, with R6, there is a bug tracker up and going, and at the moment, myself, the other developers, and the testers are using it. But once we go, you know, release to the public, then it'll be open to everyone. And that is fly spray that we're using.
So as far as the development cycle, do you track, you know, the releases of Myth, or do you do your own thing?
Well, we track it. Obviously, the patches that we make to it aren't, you know, anything major, so.
Have you had a chance to look at some of the screenshots of 0.22, how that's shaping up? I know one of the big things is they're going to Qt 4 for everything.
Yeah. Actually, some of the screenshots I've seen look really, really good. And within the next week or so, I will have, I hope to have one of my systems that I'll have at scale up and running in 0.22 so I could show that off to folks.
That's cool. Did you communicate with any of the people from the MythDV project at all?
Very little.
I guess they're too busy doing their own thing.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, the way I look at MythDV is, you know, I'm essentially a user. Granted, I'm not your average user, but, you know, I let them do their thing and I do mine.
Yeah, but I mean, have you received any positive feedback from them at all? I mean, have they said, you know, good jobs, Cecil, right on the money?
No.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, you know, there's a few folks that, you know, like it, but, you know, I communicate very little with any of them.
Well, when you release this final, I'm definitely going to install it and do a good review on it. You know, the idea of using Arch as the OS base is sounds very interesting.
I think, you know, there's lots of great stuff in .NET, and, you know, with the new release, we've got, you know, more of a focus on it being appliance. No, an end-to-end solution that just flows. I think in the past people have, you know, detracted, you know, .NET because they, you know, see it as a text-based installer, and, you know, other distributions may have a graphical installer, but, you know, with .NET you spend about 20 minutes installing. You know, some people, they go from nothing to live TV in 15 minutes. You know, and if that's the case, what does it matter if you have a text installer? The end game is, you know, an appliance. And we've delivered, I think, quite well for the past 5+ years.
So I'm sure there's people in the Namath community who have just upgraded with each release.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I always enjoy seeing is, you know, whenever I'm thinking, this is just, why am I doing this? You know, I'll get an email or, you know, someone will post on the forum that, you know, they've been using it for X number of years and it's changed the way, you know, they and their family watch television. You know, it really, really is like, all right, I guess I can keep doing this now.
So what's on your top 10 playlist or recordings?
Yes. Anybody related with MythTV has to answer this question.
I guess I'll have to go into MythWeb, huh?
Well, you got to do it.
Bye, Kiki. Just a second. Okay. Family Guy, King of the Hill, Aqua Teen Hunger Force, Futurama,
yeah.
Venture Brothers,
One in the Hood,
Naruto, Kitty Grave, The Boondocks, Bucky the Grappler, Stargate Atlantis.
Very nice.
Yes.
Oh, Aqua Teen, baby. You don't watch Aqua Teen, do you, Pat?
No, I've watched a little bit of it. I like Venture Brothers better.
And the girlies want to scream.
Yeah, number one in the hood. They're awesome. I'm sorry, Alan, you wanted to speak.
Number one in the hood, baby.
Yeah. There's a podcast out there that the guy who does the voice of Shake does.
Dana Schneider, I believe.
Yeah, I think he's on it. It's when I went and I looked for the Smodcast, which is the one that Kevin Smith does. It was I listened to that too. They're funny guys. They are funny guys. So what are your gripes about Myth TV? I mean, we know how wonderful Myth TV is, but what are your gripes about Myth TV, if you had any? I'm sure you do.
My number one and probably only issue with Myth TV is sometimes, it's the way it handles recording. Like, say I'm watching live TV and I have a scheduled show to come on. You know, if I don't set it up and tell it, you know, I forget the exact parameters, but, you know, it'll come up and it'll say, you know, a show is going to record, you know, do you want to keep watching live TV or whatever. Well, I have 7 tuners, you know, between the two systems. Just record it. Don't bother me. So that'd be my...
Right, you want an automatic fallback.
It's the way I've watched TV, you know, 6-plus years now.
So how does Myth TV deal with multiple tuners then? Can you say what you want one tuner to be the primary tuner and other ones as secondary or the third ones?
Well, the first tuner that you define as the database is your primary. So if you only have one system, you know, when you go to watch live TV, that'll be the tuner it uses. And there's actually a flag in there, you know, for it to... let me see if I can get to it real quick. Where it doesn't bother you, but it's still not as, I think, as intuitive as it could be.
My only gripe with Myth TV is the Myth music. I think the Myth music could be a little better organized. Doing the playlists, it's a little kludgy doing setting up a playlist. Going in and updating it. I think that could be improved a little bit.
And there's avoid conflicts between live TV and scheduled shows.
So where is that exactly in?
That is... if you go to the setup, TV settings, general, and it's on the first page. And actually, that would be my second gripe. There's just a wealth of configuration options. You know, so if you really wanted to tweak things, you can.
Too many? Too much?
Yeah. Like I said, just a bunch of configurations options. And really, I can't comment on the other distributions, but, you know, out the box, we set up, you know, what we think are sensible configuration options for all the users. Your recording directories are set, and, you know, your locations for videos, music, and so forth, and you know, these are things that we've had since the beginning of the distribution. One thing I look forward to doing after the bus settles a bit on Linux is building packages for like Xbox Media Center and so forth. Because I know some users have asked about packages for that and like Moxie. The packages will be available for those on Linux.
Cecil, do you guys have a YouTube plugin?
Yes, Mitstream allows you to use YouTube. Myth Vodka, which I'm working on, does the same. No, it doesn't. Myth Vodka doesn't work with YouTube. It works with Hulu and the BBC. When Myth TV 0.22 is released, there is a MythTube plugin that will be available.
Yeah, Hulu is definitely a big thing that people want.
Yeah.
I guess the only other thing that people seem to be asking for is Netflix, but that's not going to happen because that's a whole DRM issue involved with that.
Well, there is, you know.
And there's also they also stream in Silverlight too. That's another thing.
Well, there's Moonlight, but I don't know what version of Silverlight is, you know, that uses on mono and so forth. You know, there's the Boxy folks will have, you know, Netflix working with Linux. So if they can do it and it's open source, then possibilities are there.
Right. There's nothing stopping you from taking their code and using it and modifying it to your own needs.
If the source is open, the possibilities are endless.
Yeah, I've looked at Sage TV. I haven't actually installed it, but I was just looking at it, and I talked to some people on the forums about it, and it seems that there was a small population of people that were like former MythTV users that switched over to Sage. And the impression that I got is these were people that used Myth like going back like 2 or 3 years ago. And you look at like the feature set of Sage TV, and it doesn't even come close to what Myth TV can do. Now their strong suit is they say that it's easier to configure. And I haven't actually done one, so I don't know if that's true or not. But I just can't see it being that much more simpler than a Not Myth or MythBuntu or MythDora install.
Well, I'd venture to say it's quicker to install Not Myth than XP and Sage TV. Anyone want to take that Pepsi challenge, just let me know.
What's the speed record? 15 minutes? 10 minutes?
12. No, actually, 12 minutes. One guy in IRC a couple years back said he did it in 7.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was an Opteron he used.
What?
So the base install is the quick part. I guess the little things that people get hung up on usually are still remotes, you know, wake and sleep, and not so much XOR configuration as much as it used to be, I think. That area is really improved.
Definitely, I think remotes is probably the big thing that folks get tripped up on. But so for years in Not Myth, you know, we've had a list of remotes that you just select a remote, and actually, if your remote's a USB remote, and we know what to look for, you know, it'll be configured automatically.
Right. What about blasters and channel-changing scripts?
Those are a work in progress. There are several that do work out the box. But like I said, you know, it's a matter of, in most cases, things like that is users working with us because we don't have the hardware to test ourselves with. So, you know, I could go to a website and follow instructions, but if I don't have the hardware to make sure it works, you know, or other developers don't have the hardware to make sure it works, you know, we got to rely on the folks out there.
So is this a hint that you want somebody to send you a Hot Pod PVR 1212 box?
Well, if someone wants to, I'm more than happy to receive it. But no, you know,
it couldn't hurt, right?
I'm just saying, you know, we try our best to make things work, and you know, the goal is to have a solid, consistent application, you know, that works as an appliance. And, you know, obviously, you know, we can't support all the hardware out there because we don't have it. But if folks, you know, run into issues and they're willing to work with us, you know, we'll do our best to ensure it works.
Because that's the big one that everybody's talking about. You know, getting also VDPAU working correctly and configured. And the Hot Pog PVR 1212, that's still not supported in the stable release yet. It's in the testing branch.
I don't know if they've committed to testing it. It was just a patch. You'd have to manually patch trunk yourself.
Right, you have to compile it, patch it, and compile it.
Yeah. Actually, one of the guys that's working with us on R6 is working on that right now. We committed some stuff to get today for it, so.
Because honestly, I think that's going to be the capture device, because it'll work with everything. It'll work with satellite, it'll work with cable. You know, you'll be able to rip your high-def DVDs.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that one.
Yeah. That's what I'm doing. I'm one of those people that actually bought an HD DVD player, and I have about a dozen or so titles. So while I'm waiting for the device to be fully supported in MIT-TV, I'm gonna do captures of my HD DVD movies. So they're backed up. Once the HD DVD player gives up the ghost, I'll still have my high def content that I have on those discs.
A good idea. That's a real good idea.
So, Dan, when are you getting the high-def TV?
When hell freezes over.
I know Alan was talking about it. Alan, have you got one yet, or that's still on hold?
No, I'm probably going to hold off a little while more on it.
Waiting for the tax money, are you?
Waiting for tax money, but I'm also going to pay off some bills. Put some in savings and hold on to it for a little while.
Don't you want to stimulate the economy?
No, I want to stimulate. I want to stimulate my bank account. Really, the hell with the economy.
I can understand that.
They've come down in price quite a bit, though. HDTVs.
Oh, yeah.
HDTVs.
Yeah, I saw an email from CompUSA today. They had a 25-inch for $229.
They're still around CompUSA? I thought they went
out
of business.
I thought they were out of business.
And they're online only.
Okay.
I
didn't know they were still operating.
Tiger Direct.
Yeah, Tiger Direct is the one I usually get. Newegg is also a good spot to look at stuff like that. It's insane. I picked up a 4 gig of memory for $26 after $30 rebate. That's what I'm going to throw into the MythBox. I'm going to upgrade it. I also picked up a new video card that does the VDPAU, so I'm going to test that out and see how that works out. Because the video card that's on there, it is an NVIDIA, but it's only a 6150, so it's not going to cut it for the H.264 stuff. It handles the MPEG-2 HD recordings okay. Like, I have an Avermedia A180 card that I have in a test box, and those you know, play back no problem, but those H.264 files, no. Well, it's cool stuff. Cecil, I really thank you for coming on and talking to us. It's been nice talking to you again. It's been too long. We wish you all the best. Once you guys release, I'm definitely going to check it out. I'll do a review. I will commit to that. And if I really like it, I might even switch to it permanently.
We will bring you back to the fold.
Yeah, yeah. Alan is still running NotMyth. Alan, you're still running NotMyth, right?
Yeah, I run it only because it's the only one that picks up my... the TV350 card that I've got in, or the PVR350 card all the time. I don't have to worry about doing anything. It says, yeah, it pops up and says, you have it? And I'm like, yep. Configures everything for me. It's really nice. I'm lazy.
That's what we try to do with, you know, as much hardware as possible. Just make it work.
And I fully appreciate that.
there are folks that don't like pre-canned Myth distros, if you will. You know, but, you know, I don't see what the issue is. You know, I myself obviously spend a great deal of time, you know, messing with the distribution, you know, but whether or not you're new to Linux or whether or not you're an old pro, you know, why waste time trying to just build essentially a VCR, you know, you just want something to work.
That's the reason I use it. I'm just really lazy. I did try NotMyth not too long ago, just to see if see what it was like. And I spent an afternoon trying to get the card to work. Finally, I just said to hell with it. It just wouldn't. All I got was a green screen from on the TV. It was a pain in the butt. So I went back to NotMyth and just said to hell with it. It works. Got to use it.
Exactly. People should take the attitude that, you know, this is an appliance. You do what you need to do to get it going, and then once it's set up, unless there's something that you need, you know, supported that's not currently supported, you keep the version on there.
Oh, yeah. The only reason I went and tried NotMyth at all, MythBuntu, excuse me, was what I was saying before. The only reason I tried that one was because my box had died on me. It overheated to the point where it, like, shut down on it. So I had to take it apart and clean it, and I figured it was about time to upgrade everything at that point anyway, so. But it works. I like it.
Good, good.
Well, Cecil, if you want to stick around and just shoot the breeze with us, we're going to go into other topics, but if you want to jump off,
sure.
That's cool, too. So guys, are you doing your taxes?
Soon.
My taxes are depressing.
I actually got my money today, actually.
Yeah, I saw your Identica post.
Yeah, I'm not on Twitter. I use TurboTax Online. I've used that for the last couple of years, and that works real well. With Linux, you'll get a stupid message saying that your browser's not supported if you use Firefox, but just ignore it and go through it, and it works fine.
You know, that is the one thing about the Internet I absolutely hate.
What's that?
Don't read what my browser is. Don't read what my freaking operating system is. It's a damn standard. Program to the standard, and you won't have to worry about all that crap. Screw MS and their perversions.
Come on, you don't think IE6 is the greatest web browser of all time?
Please.
Talk to Dan, he's a web developer.
I'll do my taxes the day before tax day is when I'll do them.
No, if I got money coming my way, I want it sooner than later.
I haven't had that coming back to me.
I do H&R Block, it's just easier.
I also hear that TaxAct Online also works pretty well with Linux. That's a little cheaper than TurboTax Online. So either of those work with Linux if you're a Linux user. You can do electronic filing and direct deposit and all that other good stuff.
Yeah, you know what? I hate that crap, too, with having to detect browsers. The only problem is, more often than not, the one you have to detect is Internet Explorer for the fixes for that. But you know what? They should code to the standards. I hate when I get the crap like that. And, you know, the one that's problematic is the one you should be doing workarounds for, not telling me I shouldn't use...
Exactly.
Any other one but that.
I refuse to do business with companies and such that come across with, you know, stupid stuff like that. Only if I absolutely have to will I, you know, use another browser. It's ridiculous.
I know, it is. It's inappropriate, it's offensive.
Dan, which is the worst web browser of all time? IE6, right?
IE5 is worse than IE6, though.
Yeah.
Any IE, I think, is the worst browser of all time. You always gotta dick around with crap for them. I'll tell you what's pissing me off. It's these damn spammers.
I know, the forums,
crap.
Lately.
Spam. And it was interesting.
Describe what the situation is, Dan.
Well, we have, the situation is we were getting like 10 account activations a day. You know, requests to activate accounts, at least 10. And it was from spammers trying to sign up on our forum, and of course to reduce spam, on our forums, we implemented that an administrator would have to activate an account before it would go live. And so we have all these, like, spammers trying to sign up our forums. We have to manually activate or delete their accounts, which is a pain. So I was talking... I saw the Countess on I think it was the Linux Outlaws channel, had said... You know, notice that problem, and I had said, "Yeah, I see it too." And I guess he was implementing Google's reCAPTCHA, which is a better CAPTCHA application to use, a plugin. So I went and I did that, and you know, we worked on it and did it, and it worked flawlessly. I mean, I had no problems implementing the Google CAPTCHA; it worked great, and. He saw a complete reduction of spamming attempts. I saw a doubling of the amount of spam activation attempts. And I'm like, come on, what the hell? I mean, today alone, I deleted like 30 or 40 accounts already. And the problem is, they're getting to that point where it's hard to determine who's legitimate. Like anything that comes in with a .ru email address is like right off the bat. We get rid of that. But some of them from like Gmail, it's really tough to tell whether it's a legitimate account of somebody trying to sign up or not. So usually if I'm questioning the account, I'll leave it around for a couple days to see if anybody contacts me. And there have been people who have contacted me. So if you're signing up on our forum and you're not being approved, contact us.
Shoot us an email. Let us know.
Yeah. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to implement, like, a question, but for some reason, I can't get the damn question to show up on the page, and I have no idea why.
What version of PHP DB are you guys using?
I think the latest is 3.03. I think we're at 3.02. But
I feel your...
What's that?
I feel your pain about spammers. I had to just totally block Gmail completely. Gmail, Hotmail, a few others. Like you said, anything from .ru is immediate.
Yeah, .ru, yep.
It's ridiculous.
And I don't like, I mean, we haven't, luckily, we've been pretty good. And we haven't had any spam for, like, what?
It's been a while.
We had spam a little, didn't we let one slip through recently? But we just
deleted it
much right away.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. I mean, we've been really good on not having spam. It's just, it's a pain in the, what are they doing? They use a CAPTCHA, and they pipe it to people looking for porn or something to answer the question.
Yeah, I saw a presentation by a Google engineer where he described this setup where these spammers, what they'll do is they'll set up a bogus porn site, okay, and what they'll do is they'll go out and they'll pipe the CAPTCHAs from sites they want to get into to this fake porn site. And then people come on the fake porn site and they say, okay, to get into our porn site, you have to do this CAPTCHA. The person fills up the CAPTCHA form. They get the information for the CAPTCHA. You know, the person goes into the fake porn site. And so basically they get people who are looking for free internet porn to do all their dirty work for them, for the CAPTCHAs. It's pretty ingenious when you think about it.
Porn. Is there anything it can't do?
You know what? You know what was really slick today, right? This was really slick. And I know that there are people, you know, this isn't bots going out there and signing up. These are actual people. Because I got an email today from somebody who said, hey, I don't think I deleted it. Hold on, let me bring it up. This was funny. I hope I didn't delete it. Let me bring it up. This was great because he almost got me. They almost got me on this. This was good. Let me bring it up. Where is it?
You have $300 million that you need $10,000 to fill the bank forms out?
This was regarding welcome to the LinuxLink.net, which is the email that we send out that says, you know, you subscribe to the forum. Your account is currently inactive, and the administrator of the board will activate it. We got a response from Ingrid Root that says, hi, thank you for reply. My profile is on, and gave his address where the profile is, right? And I'm, like, sitting there, I'm, like, looking at this, and I'm, like, you know, I'm, like, do I approve this account or what? Because they did respond to me. He sent me an email with the profile, and I was just about ready to approve it, right? And I decided, well, you know what? I don't know. I just clicked on his profile. Sure enough, it pops up. It's just like adult friend finder kind of place.
Oh,
on the page, and I'm like, yeah, good try. So that was pretty slick. I mean, they actually signed up and sent an email afterwards. You know,
they've got a lot smarter, those people.
Yeah, but they screwed up by providing the profile. Had the person not sent a profile link that was this ridiculous, I wouldn't have approved them. I might have actually approved them. They might have gotten through, but they screwed up. So, they almost had me.
Well, if you want to get instantly approved in our forum, fill out the information, something about Linux. Let us know. Linux.
You know what the problem is? And I just noticed this. When you go to register, and I know this because I'm actually doing registration attempts and trying to get this damn question to show up, there's nothing more you can put in here besides your username, email address, password, a time zone and stuff. So what I'm hoping is after we get this question and answer put in place, and you know, it's a damn easy question for anybody who's signing up on the forum. I mean, the question's going to be, what OS are these forums about? You know, and that's easy. It's Linux, obviously, so you put in Linux, and that should rule out like 90% of the spammers trying to sign up, because they have no clue what the hell they're doing.
And Windows users.
Yeah, Windows users. But
Speaking of which, did you guys see the thing on, let me see if I can find it, ZDNet, where some guys in Australia took KDE 4 out and told Windows 7.
Yeah, well, most people couldn't tell the difference. They don't know anything. They're clueless.
That was pretty funny.
I like KDE 4.2, by the way. I think it's great. It's actually the first usable version in the 4 series that they've released.
I might try it again. I tried 4.0, and like 3 weeks was about all I could stand of it.
Yeah, yeah. I've had it since they released it. Was it like last week or a week and a half ago? I forget when it was, and I'm still running it. I like it so far. Yeah, they were like, yeah, this is the new music program. They show them like Amarok. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, I posted the link in the IRC channel.
Dan, you're running Windows 7, aren't you, as your main OS?
Hold on a second.
He's rebooting.
I'm sorry, my wife called. She's on her way home from school, but I run Windows 7? Hell no. But I did see that that video from ZDNet that you were talking about, and that was pretty damn funny. That was... Windows 7. I don't know. It's going to be the Linux killer.
They keep saying that. And supposedly someone posted an article saying that they're appointing some kind of anti-Linux chief or something, that the primary job is to attack Linux in preparation for the release of Windows 7. My thought is, why should a company put all this energy into, you know, being anti-competition, where they should be putting all their energies and resources to fixing the damn OS? You would think that would be more productive, you know.
No.
You know, I mean, what's new? I mean, they've always attacked Link, so what? They're just going to have someone officially doing it now?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Let me get that article where they mentioned it.
They don't need to worry about attacking Linux. They're already going to beat us, right? Dun, dun, dun. Ay, 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 ay. What they need to do is position Xbox Media Center to destroy Myth TV once and for all. Then Cecil can work on not Xbox Media Center.
Did you have like an April Fool's posting, Cecil?
Yeah, I did. And you know,
that was good.
You got hired by Linux MC, right?
Yeah, people were still asking me about it up until a month ago.
That was really good because I read that too and I was like, wow, well that sucks. Nah. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's April Fool's. That was really good. I forgot about that.
There was one about scale too that they got bought by the Linux World Expo. Curiously, scale's still going, but the Linux World Expo is now open source world.
Open source world. How long is that going to last?
I don't know. We were at the last Linux World Expo on the East Coast up in Boston. We were actually in the .org pavilion. It wasn't a bad experience. We got to meet a lot of cool people, you know, involved in the industry and everything. But you could see that, you know, the interest has waned in that show quite a bit. I mean, years ago, we used to go to the Linux World Expos in New York, and those were big events, man. They'd have it at the Javits Center, and it was huge. We load up a bus full of people from the local lug, and we go every year. Good time.
The code is at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. The last year we went was hysterical. We were drinking on the right end at 7 o'clock in the morning. So, we finally got some decent entries for the Scott Sigler competition.
Yeah, people need to continue sending stuff in for that.
You know who sent really good response was Chess Griffin. I think he nailed every single one. There were a couple people that nailed it.
Yeah, but we automatically disqualify him because he's dead to us.
That's true.
But what are you going to do? Oh, yeah. I don't know. Hold on one second.
How much longer do they have to, like, submit for that?
I think he sits till the 13th, so Friday.
Should we extend it one more week because we've been getting responses in?
Yeah, maybe we'll do it till next Wednesday. What do you think? Up till showtime next week.
Oh, so we want to have winners by showtime next week?
No, we won't do we won't announce the winners next week. We'll do it the week after.
Okay.
Cecil, do you take monetary contributions for NotMyth?
Yes, I do.
Well, if you want to support NotMyth, send Cecil some cash. You have a PayPal link on your on the website?
Actually, if you go to the website, you can get to there via mysettopbox.tv, notmyth.net, or linhess.org. That's LINATS. There is a make a donation. We can donate. Also, for the two systems that I mentioned, the Atomic Ant and Parcel, a $10 donation will get you a raffle ticket, and I will be raffling those off at scale next week.
Now, do you have to be there in person to win?
No. I've received donations from those via PayPal, and the winner does have to pay for shipping. But, you know, winner need not be present.
People, if there's an open source project that you like, you use the software, you enjoy it, you know, you don't have the time to contribute in other ways, such as documentation or code or anything, throw them a little cash every once in a while. It helps. There's costs involved. You know, these guys, you know, they work hard, you know, they use up their time. Show them a little support every once in a while is all I ask. Speaking of which, Ardour, which is a great audio application, multi-tracking application, Paul Davis is the main developer. He was receiving sponsorship from this company called SAE, and they were helping pay him so that he could develop 100% of his time to Ardour, and it sounds like they're ending their sponsorship. So unless people can help contribute to Ardour, he's going to have to start looking for other work to help support himself and his family. So if you want Paul to keep working full-time on Ardour, go to the Ardour website, Ardour, ardour.org. And you can help contribute to that great project as well, besides NotMyth.
Yeah.
Anybody else with their handouts?
You could send me money if you want. I could always use it.
Definitely. Yeah, you could send those cash too if you'd like. Definitely helps.
I haven't even checked our, whatever the hell we call it. PayPal donation.
I think I got rid of the DVD button.
Why?
I don't know. When he did the website redesign, he omitted it.
The bastard.
Yeah, maybe he just missed it.
Look at you sticking up for him.
No, I'm not sticking up, but just saying. Maybe he missed it when he did the redesign.
You know, I think I know why. It's not registering any of the changes I make. Which is very odd.
Because you're not saving.
Because I've deleted the files that I've been changing, and they still show up. I don't know how it's doing this.
Dan, you're getting rusty with the admin skills, man.
You're leading him in the wrong directory, Dan.
It would almost seem like that's what I'm doing. But... how can this be? What the hell? It's still there! How does it do it? What's odd is I changed the files yesterday, and when I did this. And the changes I made yesterday are there, but even if I get rid of the file, it still shows up. How could that freaking be?
FM.
FM?
You never heard that?
What's FM?
No static at all.
How can this... this is just like... It is amazing. I don't know what the hell... I can't be reading... huh. Alan, what's going on?
I think you're deleting them on the wrong system.
This makes absolutely no sense. It would almost seem like that I'm... oh, wait a minute. Is it the cache?
Gotta refresh your cache, man.
On the forum?
Yeah.
No, the cache in the forum?
No, the cache on your web browser.
I have done that, and it still hasn't made a difference. No, I have done that. I've deleted my cache. Like I said, it's almost like... you're right. It's almost like it is caching the pages somewhere. But I've used two different browsers now. I've deleted the cache.
I thought you were like a webmaster, Dan.
I am. Like I said, I'm working on the same files I worked on yesterday. But they're not... it's just weird. Huh.
Oh, I had a question for Cecil about NotMyth. Cecil, what file system are you using for the recordings partition? Are you still using the XD3 or...
well, on my master backend, I'm using XFS. Actually, my slave backend that MIT partition is EXT3.
So what's the default, EXT3?
With not MIT yet, so the default is EXT3. With Linhas, you'll be able to choose between EXT3 for XFS and JFS.
Have you played around with EXT4 at all?
Not extensively.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it. They say it's a big improvement.
Ha ha! That was it, man. It was cached template files that I had to purge the PHBB cache in the forum itself.
Well, glad you figured it out, man.
Now I gotta fix something here, though. You know what I'm talking about. You know what it's all about, Cecil. You know, you've been there. Shit, now I don't know what I did. Don't you hate it when you're like working on something and it's just not coming together right, and it's ticking you off and ticking you off, and it turns out to be something really stupid?
Yeah, that sounds like me, man. I get all the complicated shit right the first time. It's the simple stuff that I usually screw up.
Yeah. I hate this. What did I screw up here? Why is it showing up as array? We're almost there, man. We're almost there.
Yeah, did you delete the glibc again?
No, I've done that, though. That's not a good thing to do.
What else did you do? You deleted your user partition? User lib?
No, I've deleted glibc twice. I've deleted dev once, back in the old Slackware days when it wasn't dynamically generated. I've done that. I deleted my root partition once on a DNS server, which surprisingly that damn thing kept running for about a year afterwards, until we lost power and it rebooted.
And that was the end of that.
Yeah.
I once accidentally formatted one of the drives I had in a LVM volume.
That good, huh?
But I was able to get it all back. That is why I've stuck with EXP3 in my slave backend.
EXT3, you said?
Yep.
Are you going to be moving the EXT4?
I won't, no. I'm happy with 3. Can't say I have a valid, reason to go to 4.
I think I'm using EXT3 as my default on my MythBox. It seems to be working okay. I know in the past I've used XFS for the recordings partition. Because XFS is really geared towards big files, right?
Yes.
Yeah, but the EXT3s yep. work fine.
I think you may have missed the question and answer, Dan, but EXT4 is going to be an option with LinHIS, so folks can use it.
It's going to be an option in what?
In LinHIS?
Sorry.
In R6.
Oh. Well, that's going to be sweet. It's going to be an option.
Yeah, just select the partition or the file system you want for NIST. EXT3 for XFS or JFS. Sorry, no BTRFS.
What's VCRFS?
ButterFS. I think that's what they're calling it. And I guess the best description would be was at the tip of my tongue, now it's gone.
Puppy power?
BTRFS is new copy and file. The new copy and write file system for Linux aims at implementing advanced features while focusing on fault tolerance, repair, and easy administration.
That'll be nice.
I guess you could say it's a true open competition to ZFS. And Oracle is the folks behind it.
Well, that'd be nice. I don't know. What can you do, though?
Yeah, you're not going to ask Cecil if he's going to sign a patent agreement with Microsoft?
He already did, didn't he? Did you sign a patent agreement? Why not?
Nope.
My number one Myth TV feature is commercial skipping.
Yes. That's great.
But the TV industry, they did a study and they found that if you watch the commercials, you enjoy your TV viewing experience better.
Who said that? The TV... I'd like to know those people who agreed on that.
They sponsored some bogus study, and those are the findings. That you'll enjoy your TV viewing experience if you watch commercials. I don't believe it.
Yeah, from the same people who want to sue you for not watching the commercials because you've entered into agreement to watch the commercials.
Wasn't TiVo going to do a thing where if you, like, fast-forward the commercials, it was going to be, like, a flash ad popping up while you were fast-forwarding?
No, it's not a flash. They actually have. It's not a flash that pops up. It's a little menu bar that asks you if you want to learn more about the program that you're watching. It doesn't really care about what the commercials are. And you can actually click on it and tell it not to show up again. And it goes away for that program, and then at that point. It's actually not really, it's not really intrusive, so I don't really pay attention to it. I still quickly jump past all the commercials anyways, so.
Yeah, none of the commercial DVR software, I don't think none of them have commercial skipping. They have they have hacks for like 30-second skipping or 2-minute skipping.
Yeah, TiVo, you can do a hack for 30-second skip on it, but it's a hack on it. If the machine reboots, it goes away. You have to redo it. It's real simple. I think it's holding down two keys on the remote. Although I don't remember what they are off the top of my head. Replay TV when it was actually doing something on it, they had a commercial skip, and the industry went bonkers over it.
Yeah, they put them out of business, didn't they?
More or less, yeah. Yeah, I've still got one sitting in a closet here. There's no clue what I'm going to do with it, but...
I wonder if you could put MVPMC on there.
I don't know, I'd like to use it for something like that, because, I mean, it's got, you know, all the stuff built into it. It just doesn't have a... I'm not sure how you would actually, how would you actually install stuff to it, because it doesn't have a, any ports on the back other than, that one does have an Ethernet card in the back of it, though. I think. Yeah, that one does have an Ethernet card in it. But I'm not sure that could actually help you. And I haven't really seen anything. I've Googled around a couple times. I haven't really seen anybody doing anything like that to them. Maybe I just haven't looked hard enough. That's probably more along the lines of I haven't looked hard enough.
Yeah, MVPMC is that firmware replacement for the Hopog Media MVP. And they actually support connecting the Media MVP to a Replay TV server and a Myth TV server. So somebody's still running it somewhere. I thought maybe they supported using a Replay TV box as a thin client for Myth TV. And I don't see that.
You know, I think a few years back there were some scripts that allowed you to access the Replay TV from Myth. Or a pseudo plugin.
Yeah, the MVPMC guys, they're porting, they're working on a port for the Popcorn Hour. which should be good, because that looks like a pretty nice device.
I don't know, Popcorn Hour, isn't that closed, though?
Partially. It's like TiVo, the same kind of deal. You know, it's running, well, the Popcorn's running an embedded version of Linux. And there are some closed source parts to it. Primarily the piece that uses the Sigma chip for the playback of the video, which is really the heart of the system. But I'm looking at one of the developers from MVPMC, and he says he actually got some feedback from Popcorn Hour people. They actually helped him out a little bit. I know they were looking, people were looking to hack the Roku Netflix box, but supposedly that thing is really locked down. Tons of encryption and DRM in there. Because you think that would be a great little box for $100, you know?
That's why they locked it down good. People figure out that it's worth, it would be better doing something else other than Netflix.
Yeah. I'm actually going to do a review of a Popcorn Hour. I contacted to see if I can get a review box, and they agreed that they're going to send me one. And I also contacted that Mica box. Have you guys seen that thing? It's another one of these extenders. The guy, like, announced it, like, going back about 6 months ago, and, you know, he was pushing it on the web, and he had some problems with the manufacturer, so he had to hold off on the production run back then. So it sounds like he's getting ready to start shipping products, and people are, like, jumping all over him on the Internet saying, you know, he's a scammer and all this. So I sent him an email just out of curiosity. He's like, I'm like, you know, can you send me a review box to check it out? I'll write a review for it. And he's like, yeah, I'll send you one. So we'll see once I actually get the thing.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Mica box, you said?
Yeah, Mica TV. Mika.tv. You know, it's another one of these, you know, extender type multimedia boxes. Small form factor. He hasn't actually started selling them yet. Supposedly he's very, very close. And the other box that I'd like to check out is the Sage TV HGA 200. You know, that thing, you know, it's really designed to work with a Sage TV server, but you can use it as a standalone device. And it does support universal plug and play. All these boxes support universal plug and play. So conceivably, it should see your Myth TV box, and you should be able to play back your recordings. The only thing it wouldn't be able to do is go in and update your recording schedules and whatnot. Which is kind of a shame because, you know, if you want to do MIT-TV, you want to get the full experience.
Yeah.
But maybe one of these boxes. I know the EVP-MC guy. He's working on porting to the Popcorn Hour. And the Sage TV box, I think, runs the same exact chip, Sigma chip. It looks like the Mica box, I think he's using a Broadcom chip, so if I can, I want to get my hands on all three boxes and do a head-to-head comparison. See how well they work with MIT-TV. Because I think if we could have, like, a $200 HD-capable extender box, I think people would go bonkers for it, especially for the MIT-TV community.
Yeah.
Actually, you could do a diskless system with a Atom and a NVIDIA card for less than $200.
Can you?
Yeah.
Because I know NVIDIA, they have that Ion platform box they were showing off at CES this year. That looks like a hot little box. Something like that would be awesome.
Yeah, the Atomic Ant is essentially that without, except it's, you know, the video card is in a PCI slot, and it's not that small, but that's essentially the idea.
Yeah, right, except what they're doing is just a small form factor.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what those little iron boxes are going to go for. I have a feeling they're going to be a little on the expensive side, like $350 or, you know?
Yeah, that, I think that would kill it.
Yeah, I think that's too much. Because if you can hack one of those extender boxes that go for like $200, I think that would be killer, you know? Supposedly they play everything back. They handled all those H.264 and high def MPEG-2s and the Stroika and all those other formats.
What are you going to do?
Anyhow. So, Dan, you want to wrap it up?
Yep.
Play us out now.
I broke the registration on the forums.
Everybody, keep sending those submissions to us. Email them your responses for the Scott Sigler book competition. 5 lucky winners will get an autographed copy of Contagious, autographed by Scott Sigler, courtesy of Rowan Golfer.
Yes, we also have a another copy that's not autographed to give away, courtesy of... Shoot, I forget his name. I'll have to look it up and make mention of it next week, because I stink. But his name's not on the package. I'll look it up. I don't know, maybe he wants to be anonymous, but we do. So please keep sending them in. We're getting them. We need more. We'd like more. You always have the opportunity to win a great book. You will enjoy it. Right, Pat?
Absolutely. Scott Sigler is awesome.
Good stuff. Have you read any Scott Sigler stuff? Cecil?
No, I have not.
Well, you can go to his website, scottsigler.com, and you could download audiobooks. If you commute to work, you can listen to them. There's like 3 or 4 different full novels that he reads, and they're all quite good.
The last book I read was A Brief History of Time, from the Big Bang to Black Holes.
Who wrote that?
Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, I was going to say that's Stephen Hawking. Well, I will play us some good music out for Peter 64, who loves to hear our music. These two songs are dedicated to you. Warp 11. Ladies and gentlemen, Warp 11.
Trekkie Girl.
And I'll play another Grammar Club song called Alternate awesome. Ending. Enjoy it. And maybe Doba too, huh?
Oh, no.
Don't
kill anybody.
The forums of the IRC will go wild. But here we go, playing this out. Next week,
Cecil,
another episode. Cecil, yeah, thank you very much, Cecil.
Thank you very much for spending the time to talk to us.
Exciting episode, and we'll talk to you shortly. Here we go.
Woo-hoo.
Thanks for listening.
Trekkie Girl.
Good night.
She knows every episode. She wear the boots to go, go, go. She got a red mini skirt. She made me play Captain.
Separate my thoughts from, yeah, she knows just what to say. And on nights when I lose my a long time ago, in the land of the dinosaurs, something would never take place. With the fate of the world resting square on your shoulders, the crew will salute as you radio bays, but they'll wipe that smile off your face. Face reconstruction CG.
Whether you've merely heard of Linux or consider yourself an expert, here's your chance to learn more about it at the Southern California Linux Expo. For 2009, Scale 7X has added two new tracks for developers and beginners. We'll have over 60 speakers who will cover the latest topics in open source software, and the expo floor will have more than 80 booths featuring commercial and non-profit organizations showing their products and software. The Friday special sessions have returned with Docs, the Open Source Conference for Healthcare. Women in Open Source will reprise their conference, as will the Open Source Software and Education Conference. The Southern California Linux Expo is February 20th, 21st, and 22nd, 2009, at the Westin LAX Hotel in Los Angeles. For more information or to register for the expo, visit socallinuxexpo.org. Use promo code CAST, C-A-S-T, for 40% off of your registration, and we'll see you at Scale 7X.
So we can paint anything we want? anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.
It's over. Good day, sir. Good day.
It's all she wrote.
Good day.
Good day, sir.
I'm taking off. Gotta get
going now.
Have a good one, everybody. Talk to you next week.
Good night, fellas.
All right, I'll talk to y'all later. Cheerio.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, I tried plugging my laptop into my HDTV, and it seems to work. The only annoying thing is Ubuntu drops your resolution down to like 800 by 600 on your laptop, and it's really low on the monitor.
When you plug in the
HDMI connection. It does the same thing when you plug the VGA connection to like an overhead scanner.
My work laptop does that automatically too.
Yeah, I guess it just assumes you're doing an overhead.
Yeah.
So when I did that, the HDMI connection showed the TV connected, and I just set it to auto, and it made the it made it 1920 by 1080. Usually the normal resolution at 30 frames per second. When I hit it auto, it did it at 60. And it made the 1080 540, so it looked all weird.
Hmm.
It's pretty funny, but you could fix that pretty easily. You just go in and you change the frames.
Who's our guest tonight?
Cecil from NotMeth. He's actually
on
the line. Yes, he is.
Hello, hello.
You got a problem tonight, Cecil? You want to fight? How you doing tonight?
Dan's in his mood tonight.
It's good to have you on. Well, wait, did I spell... I spelled not myth wrong. There we go. Ha ha ha. Awesome. Picky.
That's
that
okay,
better?
Dan. That not myth thing is... The name is changing. Right, Cecil?
Right.
Well, you should change the name to reflect my spelling errors. Not I should change in my spelling errors to reflect the actual name. Isn't that the way these things go? Or better yet, I could fork the project.
You're certainly within reason to do that, actually.
I couldn't do that. That'd be too much work. Where's Link tonight? No Link.
Dan, I uploaded a song to the music folder.
And I threw it in the garbage.
Okay. Because you want to play Doba again, don't you?
I didn't play Doba yet.
Would you like to know?
Let me see what your song is. And Alan's on tonight. Hi, Alan.
Yeah, it's shocking.
What's going on? What happened to you last week? You out drinking?
No, my grandmother passed away.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Right,
so Wednesday I was, she passed away Thursday on it, so we were with the family and all on Wednesday.
Yeah, that'll ruin your day.
My condolences.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so Warp 11 puts out songs in AUG format?
Yes, they do, when they go through me.
Oh. I'm sorry, Alan. Go ahead.
Oh, I forgot what I was saying. Don't worry about me.
You know what I'm going to do tonight? Just for Peter64, I'm going to play two songs at the end of the show. Because he complained about us playing songs at the end of the show. So now I'm going to play two songs.
What's he complaining about?
He's like, well, why can't you put it at the end of the show instead of the fake end of the show?
The only thing that he can complain about is your musical pace. That's about it.
Well,
that's a valid complaint.
That's not a valid complaint. What's wrong with the Grammar Club?
That one's one of your better ones. We'll just leave it at that.
I think if I stay off of PodSafe Audio...
Yeah, maybe you should, Dan.
I should get back on the Magnatune. What do you recommend, Cecil?
Nah, nothing really.
Okay.
On occasion, I might, you know, do Pandora or... there's another one a friend of mine introduced me to not too long ago.
Well, we can't do Pandora because that would be violating copyright, now wouldn't it? That's what Pandora is, right? Actually, maybe I'll play three songs now. I'll play Doba. Because everybody loves Doba, even
I don't know if Doba actually qualifies as a song. That's more like a torture device.
Yeah, I was going to say that's more torturous than anything else.
Would you really like to know? Wouldn't you like to know?
Have you ever listened to Dreamt Of by Armadillos, Cecil?
You don't want to hear it, trust me.
No, I've not.
You don't know what you're missing, man.
I'll take your word for it.
Here, let me give you a little taste.
Hey, it's showtime.
Is it showtime?
Yeah, it's time to shut the wouldn't you like to know. That's awful.
Alright.
It's definitely something different.
Something for
each his own.
Alright. Cecil, you've listened to our show before, right?
Yes, I have.
Alright, so we're... Cecil, I'm sorry. Cecil, we're going to do the show introduction music, which is going to probably be about 2 minutes long with the scale promo. This is the last week we have to do the scale promo, isn't it?
Yep. Actually, next Wednesday, because the show starts next Friday.
That's right. Okay, so next week is the last week we get to do it. And, well, without further ado, I will start us off. All right, ready, gentlemen?
Do it.
Want the Myth, part two.
Let's do it.
Or is it three?
Two.
Two.
Let's
five, four, three, two.